This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 87.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we talk with Vinny Tortorich, author of the book Fitness Confidential. We get into dietary and fitness myths and what really helps people to lose weight. And for this episode's quick tip, Angie will tell you what to do if your Garmin GPS watch breaks. And to train with us for your marathon or half marathon, find out how to become a member of the Academy by visiting marathontrainingacademy.com. Well, Angie, we have the Tupelo Marathon coming up really soon. How do you think you're going to do?
I'm going to die.
Why? Because it's so hot?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
I feel like I'm going to get slaughtered down there.
We can be slaughtered together.
Yeah, we're going to run together. But that's okay because the medals say trample the weak, hurdle the dead. So.
I think they mean like roadkill because apparently it's along, you know, roads that have a lot of dead possums. And
really? Okay, I thought it was dead runners that went down there.
Hopefully it's just roadkill. We're used to hurdling that kind of stuff on our country roads that we run on.
Yeah, I saw a big old fat dead possum today.
It's like, oh, hold your nose. Okay, we're clear.
I only saw it on the way back. I kind of had an out and back run today, and I'm thinking, how did I miss that the first time? I don't know.
It's interesting how you can just focus on the stuff on your side of the road.
Yeah.
And yeah, the reverse direction offers like a whole new perspective of things.
So you're kind of nervous about running in such a hot climate?
I'm not nervous. I just have very low expectations for myself. I mean, I know I can finish. You know, it's not going to be that bad, but it's not going to be speedy or anything either.
Yeah.
And I'm prepared for large amounts of sweat to come pouring forth.
So why are we doing it? That's a good question.
Because it's so fun.
Sweating out toxins.
It hurts so good.
Just to say we did it.
That's right. Another nice medal to add to my collection.
Don't they give out tie-dye race shirts?
I think so, yeah. It's kind of a unique race, and so, you know, it's smaller, but it'll be neat. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm going to wear that shirt with pride.
Definitely.
As long as I don't look too weird in it.
Yeah, your dad got that one race shirt recently at a run, and it was purple, long sleeve, and the silk screen on it was like this big flower.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking,
like delicate flower.
Who would think that a guy would want to wear that?
Yeah, it was like the ugliest race shirt I've ever seen.
And your dad, you know, can really pull a lot of things off. He's not like super, like, I don't wear certain color kind of guy, but
yeah.
It was even too much for him, so I inherited it.
Because we know how much you like flower patterns.
Right. Get me away from the paisley.
Yeah, so hopefully on the next episode, episode 88, we'll have a full recap of the Tupelo Marathon, Tupelo, Mississippi, assuming that we don't DNF, right?
Don't even say those words.
We've never DNF'd before.
Let's not jinx ourselves.
All right, so what all's been going on? Our friend Eric Strand finished the Leadville 100 here recently.
For the second time?
Yeah. So congratulations, Eric, for finishing. And what was his time?
I believe 28 hours and one minute.
Some change. So,
yeah,
right on. Like an hour, more than an hour faster than his first Leadville running.
It's pretty awesome. He puts together a really neat race recap video and, you know, just stunning views. And, you know, he interviews or talks to different runners along the course. And he posted that on our main Marathon Training Academy Facebook page. So if you want to go over there and check it out, it's pretty inspiring.
Yeah, and who else do we need to give a shout out to today?
Well, a couple of my coaching clients, John and Noel, both ran the Madison Half Marathon recently, and despite the hot, humid temperatures, they both managed to PR. So,
are they related?
No, they're not, actually.
Did they know that they were going to both be there?
Well, I told them, but you know, I told them that, hey, I know someone else who's running that race,
uh-huh.
Because they sent me a profile of the course so I could look at it and give them advice about how to run it. And I was like, this looks really familiar. I think I just looked at this course. So it was really interesting. So, yeah, it was a tough day for them, but they both did great and finished strong. So that was very impressive. Also,
yeah.
Joan PR'd at a 5K recently at 51 years old. So she rocked it, too.
Nice.
I'd also like to say congratulations to Kirk. He just ran his first ultra marathon, and he said he was pretty wiped out from doing it, but he got second place overall in the 51K at the ET Highway Full Moon Midnight 51K. So he had
a time of four hours. How do you fit all that on a medal? That's what I want
to know. I hope it had like a good alien or something. But he finished in 4 hours and 13 minutes, so that's very impressive.
This guy's crushing it.
He is. It's awesome. And I got an email from Nancy. She says, I've been listening to you and Trevor for about a year, and I love your podcast, especially on long runs. Angie, you have a great smile. Thank you, Nancy.
How does she know?
It's just my voice that comes through.
She does have a very nice smile.
I'm a little bit vain about my teeth, so.
She's very, very white teeth.
Anyway, Nancy says, I've been a runner for many years, just for the fun and health of it. I ran a lot, plus did a couple of half marathons. Then, about 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with anal cancer. She says, what? First of all, how do you get that one? The next thing I know, it was stage 4, and half of your lung is coming out, and they told me I might have 2 years to live at most. Well, guess what? That was 5 years ago, and I just ran my first full marathon. It was the light at the end of the tunnel in Washington State, and woohoo, I qualified for Boston 2014. That half a lung apparently is unnecessary. I just tell myself never, ever give up. I'm having a ball and a few weeks out from marathon number 2 in Portland. Then I'm on to Boston, where I'll be running for the sheer joy of it. I'm really impressed how she's had so many obstacles to overcome and just has a great attitude and is really accomplishing a lot out there. And, you know, be thankful that you have both your lungs. Be thankful if you've never had a battle with cancer and, you know, just never give up, like she said.
Well, thank you for sending that in, Nancy. And I know it's going to be inspiring to people who are listening to this episode. We also had a message come in from a lady who said, do you guys have any MTA gear? She wants to get her daughter, as a Christmas gift, some MTA-branded gear. And much to my chagrin, we do not have any MTA gear. Not even a measly hat.
Or a coffee mug.
Not even a pin. Angie does have business cards. She has like 1,000. She's maybe given out 5 her whole life.
No, I've given out at least 50. Okay. All the family members. No, I'm kidding.
I even carry her business card on me. Yeah, but we think it's a great idea, and with Christmas coming up in about 4 months, we should really get on the ball and get some MTA gear together for anybody who wants to.
Yeah, we've been saying this for 2 years, though.
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, t-shirts, first of all, t-shirts are hard to get made. Any a quality shirt with a quality graphic on it can cost so much money, like 30 bucks. Who wants to pay 30 bucks for a technical shirt?
Well, especially if you're not buying them in batches of like 5,000 like marathons do.
We don't really have the capital outlay to buy 5,000 shirts and like sell one at a time.
Plus, we're lazy. We don't want to like ship them out one at a time.
We don't want to go to the post office every day shipping out shirts and dealing with returns.
Our post office here is very, very slow. So, yeah.
Very inefficient.
Anyway, we have a lot of excuses, but we do want to get some MTA logo gear. But we want to know what people want. So yeah, we welcome your ideas, and if you have any expertise on the subject, please contact us.
Well, let's go ahead and get into our feature segment. We're going to talk with a fellow podcaster, an endurance athlete and personal trainer, and an author of a new book, Fitness Confidential. It's a bestseller on Amazon right now. His name is Vinny Tortorich, and he's just a guy that likes to tell it like it is, as you'll be able to tell in this interview. So let's get right into it. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. Well on my way, well on my way, well on my way. All right, we're on the podcast today with Vinny Tortorich. He is the author of the book Fitness Confidential, with which Angie and I have recently read and highly recommend. He's the go-to fitness guy for celebrities and athletes who need to get fit fast. And he hosts the Angriest Trainer podcast and is also an ultra-endurance cyclist. So, Vinny, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So, we were just talking a moment ago about how this show came about. Angie read your book on our way to Montana this summer and was laughing on the whole trip. And I just recently got done with the book. In preparation for this interview, really enjoyed it. So there was a fan of yours who, I guess, listens to our show as well and helped us make the connection. And she says that sometimes you like to drop the F-bomb. So
yeah.
This is a family-friendly show, so just if anybody's listening, if Vinny has dropped the F-bomb, we've already edited it out, so you won't be able to hear it.
Well, you know, I can't control myself. It's my show. There's a little blue comedy in it, and you know, it's funny. You talk about the fans. My fans are ravenous, and when I started this whole project, you know, 16 or 17 months ago, I didn't have any fans. I mean, the concept of me having fans is like the craziest thing in the world. But, you know, we put this book out, and I'm going to go back and explain what I'm talking about in a second. But when we put this book out, we didn't know how it would be received or if anyone would receive it. And we figured we would have to hire a publicist. But the book has been out now for 8 weeks, for 2 full months. We've not hired a publicist yet. The book is still a top-rated book on Amazon, as well as iBooks and all the other, you know, electronic books. And you can buy the physical book at Amazon. And we still don't have a publicist. As a matter of fact, right before I got on the phone with you and Angie, I got a call from U.S. News and World Report. They're getting ready to do a big article on my book, Fitness Confidential.
Nice.
Tomorrow. I have that interview tomorrow. And I even asked them, the girl's name is Rachel Pomerantz. She's the one that's going to do the interview. I said, Rachel, how did you find me? And she said, I found you because of the buzz around you and the book and what's going on. And that really, really made me feel great. You know, that, you know, this book is actually getting out there. It's gone beyond my podcast audience to really, really get out there. And, you know, Angie, you talked about reading the book and laughing out loud driving to Montana. I think, you know, when you read the reviews on the book, we still have a virtual 5-star review. I think it's been reviewed well over 300 times now. Everyone says you will laugh, you will cry. How many fitness books do you, where you read the reviews where people go, you're going to laugh and you're going to cry? I mean, it's the whole thing has been beyond anything I would have ever imagined.
I think that's part of its major strength is that it entwines your personal story with your philosophy and fitness and health. And I really think the two go hand in hand really well.
Yeah, I think so too. I wasn't sure about putting a book out that included my own life story. That's not something I'm not sure anyone wants to put their life story in writing, especially when you're not famous. I mean, if you're a famous person, people want to figure out how you became Whitney Houston or how you became Justin Bieber. They don't want to know how Vinnie Tortorich from the swamps of Louisiana ended up being, you know, the Beverly Hills go-to guy. But as Dean Laurie pointed out, my co-writer in this book, he goes, that's exactly what people want to read.
It's like the American dream. It's like the everyman's story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I never thought of my story as being that way. But it literally took, you know, a Hollywood writer. Not only a Hollywood writer, but Dean has written several books, several best-selling books. And, you know, he's a close friend of mine. He kept begging me to do this book. And one night he and I were having a scotch. And he said, you know, why won't you let me write your story? I said, because it's not interesting. And he said, let's do it anyway. And I said, Dean, everyone comes to you. You know, when you're a Hollywood guy and a Hollywood writer, people go to people like Dean all the time and they'll say, hey, Dean, listen, I have a great idea. I'll tell you the idea and then you can go off and, you know, write the book or write the TV show or write the whatever and just give me half. They forget that the idea is the easy part. Yeah. The going off and writing the book or doing the whole thing is the hard part. But here was a case where the Hollywood guy was coming to me saying, this story needs to get out there. And I'm appreciative and I'm very happy that Dean forced me to do this.
Yeah.
So let's rewind a little bit and tell our audience how you became interested in the fitness industry and decided to pursue a personal training career.
In order to tell the truth about that, I'm going to have to lie. I literally started, and the book chronicles this, as you know, when I was a young kid, I was getting beat up a lot because I had a really bad speech impediment that was brought on because I had a hearing problem. So I started off life kind of in the backseat, and I was the kid that got goofed on and picked on. And this guy in my hometown got a hold to me, and we tell the story. Actually, I find that guy after I find Jack LaLanne on television one day. And it was this old Italian guy in my hometown who took me in and started teaching me how to lift weights and get in shape when I was literally 8 or 9 years old. I can't put an exact, you know, I don't know if it was 8 or 9, but it was somewhere in that time period. And that kind of became my thing. That gym became my saving grace. When I went to Tulane University on a football scholarship, I had to pick a major. And so I picked education because both of my parents were teachers. And I ended up majoring in physical education, which most people go, well, that's like the dumbest thing you can ever do because PE teachers are supposed to be dumb or lesbian or both. But it's what I truly love doing. And at a school like Tulane, which is a medical university, they literally put you through pre-med. I was the only kid taking physical education my year. And I don't think the whole time I was there, there were more than 10 people over the 4-year period I was there that got that degree because it was so difficult to get because you had to basically go through pre-med and get a secondary teaching diploma on top. So it's kind of like getting a double degree just to become a dumb PE teacher like myself. When I started training people, we weren't called trainers. I started training people back in like 1982 or 83, somewhere in that time period. There were no trainers in the country. There were no that career didn't exist. Down in New Orleans, they used to call me the exercise guy. Some of these blue blood, the elite that were hiring me, the old oil money, he's like, yeah, Vinny, the exercise guy is coming over. There was no say. As a matter of fact, a trainer used to be the guy that taped you up before football practice and iced you down after practice.
Right.
You know, a trainer is a whole different real career. But we've bastardized the term to become what trainers are today, which is, you know, some out-of-shape guy at 24-hour fitness telling someone who's in better shape than him how to get in shape.
Right.
So why do you call yourself America's Angriest Trainer?
Because I was sitting around with Dean one day, and we said, hey, would you call me America's Trainer? And Dean said, you should add angry to it. And I said, okay. It was really that simple. And we took it from a line from the book. We really feel like, or my feeling is, your good intentions have been stolen. Mm-hmm. And what that means is people don't want to get fat. You know, we tend to think of really morbidly obese people as being lazy. Mm-hmm. They're not. We think of them as being, you know, misinformed or dumb or lazy or people that just don't care. Guess what? All of those people care. Mm-hmm. They're not dumb. You would be saying that, you know, Chris Christie is dumb. You would be saying that a lot of people that run Fortune 400 companies are dumb. These are all fat people. They don't want to be fat. No one wants to be fat. No one wakes up in the morning and says, hey, you know what? I'm 300 pounds overweight. I feel good about that.
Right.
No one has ever felt good about that. And the fact of the matter is that we've become this way because our good intentions have been stolen. We've been told that Gatorade is good for us. We've been told that 8 essential vitamins and iron in a crappy sugary cereal is good for us. We've been told that Power Bars and Clif Bars, probably all sponsors of yours, right?
No.
Are good. We've been told that athletes need goo. You know, it's all sugary, crappy things. They've stolen our good intentions. And that makes me angry. I'm not angry at the person. I'm angry at the health and fitness industry who got the person into the shape.
It's sad how, you know, vulnerable people like that are basically being preyed upon by a very commercialized industry that's bringing out a new product every week, you know, to take care of the problem, supposedly.
I mean, even Jelly Belly got into it. They took their jelly bean, they added a little salt to it, and they call it a sport bean. You know, Really? I mean, is that where we are now? Where we're just taking crappy candy and turning it into a thing? People go to these triathlons. You know, you have, you know, 300-pound people. They'll say, you know what? I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to start running. I'm going to start swimming. I'm going to start cycling. I'm going to become a triathlete. And they will cross the line in a triathlon, and they will hear, Johnny Smith, you are now an Ironman, and all the stuff they do, and Johnny's coming in at 17 hours. And then you have to ask yourself, what type of work did it take a 300-pound man to come in 17 hours? Well, let's see. He had to do somewhere in the neighborhood of 30, maybe 32 hours a week in aerobic training.
Right.
Well, if aerobic training made you thin, why did Johnny only go from 300 pounds to 270? Now, I'm sure Johnny's very happy that he lost 30 pounds, but why didn't Johnny lose 100 pounds? It took him a year, and he was doing over 30 hours of aerobics a week. Well, it's something more insidious than Johnny just exercising. Johnny was drinking the Kool-Aid, pun intended, of what they tell you to eat. Johnny went out and bought a triathlon magazine. Johnny went out and bought a Runner's World. Johnny went out and bought Men's Fitness. And what are these magazines telling us to do? Take a goo. Take sport drink, take Gatorade, take Cliff Bar, take Power Bar. You know, that's what Johnny did. It was almost like Johnny was at a seven-year-old's birthday party eating sugar all day long. Every time Johnny got on the bike, that's what he was eating. That's why Johnny only lost 30 pounds in 1 year when he should have lost 100.
I think that's really interesting because I think a lot of people in our audience are at that spot right now. You know, they do tons of cardio, cross training, even strength training, and they're just not seeing maybe the fat loss they want or the results with their weight. And so you're saying that it comes down to what percentage of diet. I mean, you know, if they already have the exercise equation in place, you know, talk about that a little bit.
The further you could get away from any kind of processed foods, and think about it, that's everything, including the chocolate milk they want you to drink after a triathlon, which is something that's driving me crazy right now. It's become my biggest pet peeve that, you know, triathlon has hooked up with chocolate milk. I'd love to know how many bazillions of dollars chocolate milk had to pay to get in on that.
The dairy industry.
But when you say percentage, it's not about percentage. You know, athletes always want to know, you know, some kind of percentage that they can use with impunity. And I don't deal in that. It's not about percentage. It's about cutting all the excess sugar you can out and cutting all grains out. Now, listen to what I'm saying. If you cut out all grains and all sugars, what are you left with? Well, you're left with fruit. You're left with vegetables. You're left with nuts, dairy, if you can handle dairy, and meat, chicken, fish, you know, you got red meat. That's what you're left with. And if you do that, not only will you lose weight, but you won't have all the inflammation in your body. I mean, just exercising those number of hours causes a ton of inflammation. And you're getting rid of that problem, too, by, you know, cutting out all the excess sugar and grain and all the other crap that's there.
Yeah, this is very fascinating, even probably revolutionary for a lot of people. We want to drill down into this. No sugar, no grain, or NSNG. How did you come up with this philosophy? I mean, have you been doing this for all the way back to your modeling days, or how did you come up
get this? Yes and no. The answer is yes and no. Because I work with, you know, I have two type of clientele. I have the Hollywood industry, which is how I pay my bills. And then I have the triathletes and the cyclists and the runners and those folks that I deal with. And for years, the way I take an actress, you know how you see an actress and you see her on the red carpet and you know she just had a baby 3 weeks ago and she looks fabulous?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. She either has me or someone like me doing that. You know, she's not genetically perfect. and the way I would keep people this way is by keeping them eating whole, good foods. Vegetables, fruit, I know it sounds boring, red meat, fish, and chicken. Mm-hmm. On occasion, I have to deal with vegans and vegetarians, but we deal with that the way we have to deal with that. And it's possible to do it if you're a vegan or a vegetarian. Very possible. But that's what I would do with those people. Now, whenever an athlete would come to me, I would have them eating like that unless they were getting ready to get on the bike or go out for a run or get in a pool. I would tell them, because the conventional wisdom, which went against everything I learned at Tulane, was your body's preferred fuel is fat. But hey, if you want to run long or swim long or ride a bike long, you have to take in carbohydrates. I subscribe to that theory too. But over the years, as I was subscribing that, I learned that, you know, look, I'd been doing, you know, ultra races myself for the better part of 20 years. And somewhere between the 12 and the 18 hour period of a, you know, 30 hour race, I would have stomach distress. And I noticed when I started dealing with triathletes, somewhere around the 10 or 12 hour mark, they would have stomach distress. That's why when you go to a full length triathlon, you'll see a line of porta potties set up at a certain point, because people need to go in and crap their brains out or throw up or do both, mm-hmm. you know? And that's when I started building my theory of, can we exercise without having all the extra sugary, grainy carbs? And I started reading more. I started reading more from Dr. Finney, who's probably done the most research on this. And then Gary Taubes had a few things out, and I've spoken to Gary Taubes. It's just different people I started dealing with. And I said, you know, I wonder if an athlete can actually do just as well without all the extra sugar and just using your body's fat as fuel. And that's when I came around and started, I guess it was right around the time I did, if you read in the book, I did the 508 mm-hmm. in 2008. I'd already been playing with it at that point. Again, I got sick during that race, but then after that race, I said, you know what? I'm going to see if I can use fat as fuel. And it turns out that you can. And I did it successfully for a couple of years. I started doing it with a lot of my my triathlon and cycling and running people. And by the time I started doing the podcast, I started telling more and more people, not just my Hollywood clients who knew about NSNG for 20 years. I started talking to my athletes about it too. And by the way, when I'm done with this podcast, I'm actually doing my own podcast. And Joe Friel is coming on. Joe Friel just did a podcast, a blog that he's now taken up using fat as fuel and is seeing success with it. So, you know, big players like Joe Friel are coming to the game. So it's not just, you know, Vinny from the swamps of Louisiana talking. You know, you have the likes of Joe Friel jumping in.
So if you have an endurance athlete and they want to make the jump from, you know, the sugary carb fuels to becoming fat adapted, what does that process look like?
It's not so bad, but it's not pretty. you got to convince these people. I try to convince people to do it in their quote unquote off season, or when they're not getting. In other words, if you're 6 or 8 weeks out from an event, I would tell you to stick with the status quo. But once your event is over with and you have some time to play around with it, it takes a while to get used to not being on sugar and grains around the clock. We call it the kettle flu. Even though we're not trying to get people into dietary ketosis, although some people are in dietary ketosis and that's fine, when you start cutting out sugars and grains, you may feel like you're getting a flu. We call it the kettle flu, where your body is so hyped up on this stuff, as soon as you get rid of it, 3 days later, you're in a fog, you have a brain fog, you think, why am I doing this? I get on a bike if I try to, I can't even swing my leg over a saddle on a bike. I might miss a day of work. Women have described it as feeling like the worst day of PMS ever.
Great.
but it's only a day or so. And once you come, we call it going to the dark side. Once your body gets away from having all that grain and all that sugar, those few days make you realize how bad those things were for you. When you get to the other side, every day you start feeling incrementally better, to where people talk about feeling like they're a teenager again. And you realize that you're running faster, and your heart rate's at a lower pace. Yeah, then you're well on your way to having a happier, better life. And people start dropping weight immediately.
So it's like you have to go through basically a detox process, you know, I mean, mentally, physically, to get the stuff out of your body. So if a person gets through that, do you recommend that they, you know, completely stay away from sugars and grains? Or is there a little bit they can allow in on, you know, occasional treat days or things like that?
We call it here on the show, and I talk about this in life, and this is why I've succeeded in Hollywood. We do what's called putting life into living. And that means, first up, let me clarify one thing. I don't believe in a cheat day.
Okay.
You know, I hear a lot out there about a cheat day. Let me tell you what happens on a cheat day. If you're living a clean lifestyle and all of a sudden you live in Nero's nook for one day, you're living in a den of iniquity for one day. Hmm. Let's say that day is Sunday. Okay. You have everything you want to have on Sunday. You're eating cheesecake and ice cream and you're going out for a froyo and you're doing all this stuff and you're just banging your body up with sugar. All day Monday, you're going to feel, you know, crappy. You're going to want to eat more because your body's released the hormone ghrelin and you're going to feel cavernous and starving all day. You might feel bloated. You might feel sick. You might have a headache. So your body by Tuesday starts to kind of come around. The cells in your body starts to come around a little bit. By Wednesday, you're finally starting to slough off what you did on Sunday. You're really starting to feel better. And you might even tell yourself, next Sunday, I'm not going to even do that. By Thursday, your body's just starting to really come around. You're really feeling by Friday, you have the best workout of your life. Saturday, you go out for your long ride or run. And Sunday, you're starting over again. It's the craziest thing I've ever heard, to take a cheat day. Now, what I suggest, we call it putting life into living, where if you're at a wedding and they're having wedding cake, enjoy the wedding cake. If you're having someone brings over the best dessert you've ever had or the best piece of chocolate you've ever had, enjoy it. You know, there was a time when I was a kid, I think you guys are a lot younger than me, when we didn't have dessert every day. We didn't walk around with a 64-ounce trough of Coke, an extra-long straw, you know, so that you don't have to bend your elbows to get up to your mouth. We didn't have all that when I was a kid. I had a Coke literally once a month. And you know how I know it was once a month? That's how often my dad took me to Frank DeNino's barbershop, where there was a Coke machine, where, by the way, Cokes used to come in a 6 or 7 ounce bottle.
Wow.
Okay? So there was one Coke a month. So I had 12 Cokes a year as a kid. We didn't have Snickers bars. We didn't have 7-Elevens on every corner where you could just walk in and buy candy. You know, people are constantly eating chips and candy and just troughs of diet soda, which is just as insidious as regular soda. None of that existed. People had things on occasion. Dessert was an occasional thing. It wasn't an every meal thing. You know, and the one thing I tell people is when you go to restaurants, just tell them to take the bread away. You don't need it.
Right. Or the chips, if you're at a Mexican restaurant.
You know what? You know what I always say about Mexican restaurants? When you have chips sitting next to the salsa, it's called salsa. When you take the chips away, it's called gazpacho.
Yeah, there you go.
Take the chips away and just spoon it out with a spoon, and you got yourself a cup of gazpacho.
Yeah.
You know, when I was on my run this morning, I thought about asking you, what would you order if you went to a Mexican restaurant?
I do it a few different ways. Usually Mexican restaurants have fish.
Mm-hmm.
So I do the fish. I always, if it's a good Mexican restaurant and they have good guacamole,
yeah,
I order the guacamole. Again, I eat it with a spoon. Why not? Why do you need that chip? No? Yeah, I know it looks weird, but I'll spoon some out onto a different plate so I'm not like, you know, double dipping a spoon whenever I spot other chips. So we do it that way. When I say we, I'm including Serena into the mix. I usually order fish, or they might have a carne asada, and you can eat all of the veggies, all of the meat, all of that. You just have to leave everything else out. If you want to enjoy a few of the beans with it, knock yourself out, you just leave the rice and the corn or the flour tortilla out of it. Now, let's say I'm at a Mexican restaurant where they don't know me and they don't speak English very well. We have a lot of that in L.A. where they're really authentic Mexican restaurants. I don't want to throw them too much because the Mexicans are the nicest people on the planet. and they just want to please people. That's the one thing I've learned about. It's part of the Mayan culture. They're just the friendliest, nicest folks on the planet, and they're there to please. And you know, if you give them too much of a tough order and they don't speak English, you're going to throw them. So in that case, let's say I want a beef burrito. I will order the beef burrito, and then I'll just cut it open and eat the insides out. Mm-hmm. And by the way, a lot of times they'll come to pick up, you know, what I've left, which is all of the flour, and they'll get upset. They'll go, oh no, you didn't like it. And then I'm sitting there trying to explain to them, no, I loved it. I just ate what I wanted to eat. Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, but that's how I handle Mexican restaurants.
It's very countercultural because everything now is grain-based and, you know, the processed food. I think about our kids' school lunches, you know, the public schools. And I just shudder at the menu that they serve every single day to these kids, you know, the chocolate milk and everything being grain-based with sugar. And, you know, it's like kids don't have a chance unless they have parents who are, you know, kind of radical like this and trying to teach them differently.
Yeah, it seems like corn is in just about everything nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, corn and grain, you know, I'll get to the school thing, but I always say this, you know, when I was in college, which was 1981, you were able to go to like a Taco Bell. Let's take Taco Bell. And you would go to Taco Bell and you could get like two tacos for 99 cents. Mm-hmm. And that was in 1981. Well, just last week I saw a taco special at Taco Bell, two for 59 cents.
Oh,
so you got to ask yourself, you know, with everything else going up in the world, like back then I drove a car that costs as much as a pair of tennis shoes cost nowadays. And so how has everything else in the past 30 years gone upstream in price, yet a taco deal at Taco Bell stayed the same price? And you can look around. You can still get a Happy Meal at McDonald's for the same price. You can still go to any of these places and get something for cheaper than you could have gotten in 1981. Now, you got to ask yourself, how can they do that? Well, the way they could do that is because our country subsidizes corn and wheat. Mm-hmm. We subsidize it so much. The reason we started subsidizing it was because, you know, back during the Depression, you know, it was like the car industry in our last Depression, the farming industry was too big to fail. Sounds familiar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So our country got into subsidizing corn and wheat. And then after the Depression was over with, our country figured out, wait a minute, that's not a bad business to be in. You know, we could sell this stuff all over the world, and we could trade for it, we could do all kinds of stuff. So now we subsidize it so heavily that it's actually a loss leader. So it behooves these fast food companies to use as much corn and wheat as they can, and sugar, by the way.
Back well, it's in addicting 70- as well.
Yeah.
It's all addicting. They don't even care about it being addicting. They just want it to be in our mouths. They want it to acquire stomach space because the more they could get in us, the more money they can make. It's kind of you would have to look at it on the scale, but it's backwards, but they do make money on it. And so if you're a guy who's living on a budget and you have a wife and two kids and you got $10 to spend on dinner, I got to ask you, are you going to go to Taco Bell where you can fill every belly in your family on 10 bucks? Or will you go to the grocery store where you might be able to buy a banana, an orange, and maybe a head of lettuce for right. 10 bucks?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it makes no sense. So when it comes to school lunches, we have the same problem. You know, what are we going to do? Well, we're going to load these kids. We're going to fill their bellies up, just like the poor guy trying to fill his family up at Taco Bell. How do we fill those bellies up? Well, we can fill them up with sugar and grains. It's the easiest way to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, and besides that, when they're not filling you up that way, there's the drink machines. Now, a few presidents back, I think it was President, I want to say it was Clinton, who decided to take sodas out of school. Remember that whole deal? Mm. We're going to get sodas out of school. Well, guess what he did? He said, hey, Coke, hey, Pepsi, hey, everybody else, big food drink company, take your sodas out of those machines and put whatever you want in it. Just take sodas out. That's what do you think they put in? They put in juice. Mm-hmm. And juice is just as insidious as soda. It has even more sugar than soda has.
and people think it's healthy, you know, it's 100% juice, then, you know.
And it's 100% crap is what it is. I mean, you know, as soon as you drink juice, it goes to your stomach. Your stomach sends the signal to your liver. Your liver sees it as being nothing but a big sugar bomb, and your body releases insulin and leptin and ghrelin. Ta-da! We create somebody else with metabolic syndrome.
That's why Trevor was looking at me weird when I wasn't drinking orange juice with breakfast.
Yeah, it's the worst thing you can have. Why don't you just take a bowl of sugar and start scooping sugar in your mouth? You know, it's the same thing.
I talked to a lady yesterday, and she said, oh, my husband's been having stomach problems, and we were talking about it a little bit because I'm a nurse, and I said, well, has he been eating anything weird? And she said, no, he just had a honey bun for breakfast and his normal coffee and some juice, and I was like, you know, and she just said it like it was normal, and I was thinking, you know, here's a lady in her 40s who has no idea how dangerous that kind of stuff is, mm-hmm. and people, you know, are surprised when they get diabetes or get sick.
I have a writer right now who came to me 2 weeks ago because he had liver failure, he had kidney failure, and he's one of Hollywood's funniest, best writers. He happens to weigh 475 pounds.
Oh, wow.
And he came to me 2 weeks ago and he said, you know, I've been fretting it, but I've been wanting to come. This guy is richer than God, yet he's about to die.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I've been not wanting to come with you. You know, I think Chris Rock tried to get him to come to me. And all these different people tried to get this guy. That's me name dropping, by the way, so people think I'm cool, so you can come over and buy my book, Fitness Confidential. But he finally came to me, and he said, I need to do this. I want to start the whole no sugars, no grains thing. And he's so heavy that in 10 days he dropped 32 pounds.
Wow.
And on the 11th day, he had a heart attack.
Oh, my goodness.
But he got to the hospital. He's at Cedars, and he's living. He's alive. And I've been talking to him every day in the hospital. And he said, you know, I'm trying to stay on my no sugars, no grains thing, but the nurses keep bringing me, you know, nothing. You know, the heart healthy diet. He's in the heart section of Cedars Sinai, one of the best hospitals in the world, and they keep bringing him nothing but grains and sugary things to eat. And he went on a hunger strike. They thought he was going on a hunger strike. So until the hospital's nutritionist came in and said, okay, yeah, we'll bring you meat and vegetables and everything you want. We wanted to give you a heart healthy meal. And she then said to him quietly, between you and me, what you want is more heart healthy than what they're giving you.
Hospital food is the worst.
Yeah, that's the dietitian at the hospital that's telling him quietly that what we're serving here is not as good as what you're asking for. But he had to fight for it.
And some people don't know how to fight for themselves or what to fight for. So I think that's, you know, why your book is so wonderful, that it's getting education out there to people and helping them to see, you know, food and their health in a new light.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad I wrote it. You know, the book industry didn't want this book to come out. It was kind of weird. We wrote the book and we sent it out to the top 22 publishers. And most of them, you know, most people get the letter of thanks, but no thanks. We got paragraph after paragraph. One publisher actually said that if this book came out or if anyone published it, they were going to sue the publisher.
Wow.
And I looked up this publisher, and it turns out that they publish all of Jillian Michaels' stuff.
It's a conflict of interest.
Well, as it turns out, most of them had a conflict of interest. And my book would be coming out against all of the books where people are lying to people. And they didn't want that to come out, except for two publishers who wanted to do the book, but they wanted me to cut it in half and give them two books. They wanted the prescriptive, and then they wanted the biography. And I said, I wouldn't do that. I'm keeping it the way it is. And because of that, we turned down a big advance, Dean and me, and we did what Dean calls literary suicide. We self-published the book. But by self-publishing, it means that we had no heat behind the book. There was no push. There was no publicist. There was no nothing. The book is now going on its eighth week of being out. It's still a bestseller on Amazon. It still sells in the top books, not just in health and fitness and diet and weight loss. It's one of the top books out of the millions of books being sold on Amazon, this is one of the top books being sold. So, you know, we're shocked at what's happening. And by the way, there's no publicist. There's no nothing. People are just finding this book. They're handing it to friends. I have one doctor that called me. She works at Good Samaritan Hospital. She's bought 25 copies now and has handed it out to her colleagues. Some of her colleagues have gone out and bought the book and handed it to their patients. So that's the kind of stuff that's going on around the book.
Yeah, I think that's really the best form of, you know, flattery, is that people see the value in information and they want their friends and their family to get a hold of it too. So yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, congratulations on the success, definitely.
Yeah, we just want to see it keep selling. Well, one, because I want a Ferrari. And by the way, folks, if you want a Ferrari, don't write a book. It's not how you get rich. we want to see it do well because, you know, when you think about it, I didn't want to put a book out. And when I finally eventually did put the book out, I wanted it to be what I wanted it to be. And I'm really glad that I stuck to my guns on that.
So we've talked about cutting out sugar and grain. And when it comes to actual exercise, you talk about going into the gym and getting the most bang for your buck. Because sometimes people are just kind of clueless when they go into a gym. Maybe they've been pressured into getting a membership. Or the personal trainers at the gym are more out of shape than they are. So how would a person go into the gym and get the most bang for their buck?
You know, it becomes a buyer beware thing. We give a lot of clues in the book as to what to do. But, you know, the main thing that you want to do is not let them take you. Look at it as if, you know, when people walk onto a used car lot, and that's the example we use in the book, you pretty much know that you're going to get a skeevy salesman walking up to you trying to get, you know, kick the tires, you know, hey, I got a cream puff over here. You got to come see. Gyms are even more insidious than that. It just doesn't look like a used car lot. So you're not aware that you're being sold to from the moment you're walking in. And as you know, in the book, we give a cute little scenario of, you know, how they befriend you and all this stuff. And the funny thing is a blogger that was writing about the book early on, before she wrote her blog, she went out and went to a gym and tried to, you know, pretend that she was signing up. And as it turns out, the guy did exactly what I said in the book. When she tried to walk out, he went, wait a minute, we had a deal that ended yesterday, but I think I might be able to extend it for you.
Wow.
He literally pulled that, the thing we used in the book, he pulled on this blogger. And she couldn't believe it. She goes, oh, my God, it was almost like he took the words out of your book. So, you know, that's the first thing you have to look for. But, you know, as you know, in the book, we don't just tell you what's wrong with trying to get a membership. We tell you how to, number one, get the best deal, you know, how to work some of these deals, try to pay cash, pay up front for the first year, do these type of things. So, you know, because what happens is once you give them a credit card number, they will keep charging that and you won't cancel it because if you cancel it, you feel like the loser. But once you're in that gym, start looking at the programs that the gym offers. Sometimes it comes with a few free training sessions. Just make sure that you're getting it with the right trainer. Look, if the trainer is overweight, it's your good hard-earned money. You know, say, no, I don't want that trainer. I want a trainer that at least looks like they're in shape.
Yeah.
You know, most of these trainers, even the ones that look like they're in shape, are basically steroid users. Make sure that the person you're getting is not going to hurt you. And just, you have to be aware. You know, you have to be aware of your environment, what they're telling you. If something doesn't feel right, it's kind of like you tell your kids, look, if a man walks up to you or someone walks up to you and it's a stranger and you don't feel right, run. I'm telling you to do the same thing in a gym. If someone's telling you crazy crap, run. Just go. Don't feel like you're going to make this person feel bad. This is your health. This is your life. We spend more time researching a pair of shoes on Amazon that we're going to buy than we do researching the guy that we put in charge of our lives.
Right.
That's not right. You know?
Yeah, definitely. All right. So if a person goes in the gym and there's like dozens of exercise machines, and then there's the free weights, and there's all kinds of possibilities that you could, you know, use the free weights for. What's the irreducible minimum Like, what workout should a person do if they want to see results fast?
God, I hate the results fast thing, but if the best thing to do is if you walk into a gym and you don't know what you're doing, you want to do a couple of things where you're pushing away from your body, and I don't mean to belittle this, but some people really don't know. So in other words, you want to push away from your body for a few movements, and then you want to pull something to your body for a few movements. So in other words, if you walk into a gym and you don't know what you're doing, you want to do something like a bench press. And if you don't know what you're doing, use a machine, because the machine is going to put you in the right position or pretty close to it. I always tell people when you're first starting off, because the first thing you'll say is, how much weight should I put on? It might be zero for you. It might be just the weight of the bar of the machine.
Yeah.
But you want to get to a point where you're doing 15 or 20 reps for three sets. You just want to get your body moving. And as your body starts moving more and you start doing it week in and week out, you add some weight to where the resistance causes you to, you know, tap out at 15 reps and then maybe 12 reps. But once you're between 12 and 15 reps, you're right where you want to be, unless you want to get into some kind of bodybuilding exercise thing. That's a whole different thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what you want to do. You want to do some push exercises like a bench press, like a dip, like a shoulder press, all on machines. And then you want to pull weight to you, like a lat pull, like a rowing. Again, use the machines. And when it comes to your legs, you want to do full leg articulation, meaning you want your hips to bend, you want your knees to bend, and you want your ankles to bend. So you're doing things like squats, lunges, leg press. Again, you might not use any weight at first. It might just be the weight of your body on all of those things. But you really want to start that easy. You don't want to strip a gear on day one and never go back again.
And that's why I think a lot of people, they go there, they overdo it, they get sore, it's discouraging, you know, and maybe they never go back.
Well, that's exactly what happens. You know, we all hear the theme song from Rocky I in our heads, and, you know, we try to walk in and do a Rocky I montage. Not good.
Right. So you have a history as an endurance cyclist, and you mentioned doing the Furnace Creek 508 before. How did you fuel for a multi-hour event, you know, given you're not putting any of the sugar and junk in your body?
Well, up until 08, I would fuel with a lot of the sugar and junk. But usually, even with that, during the races, I would eat real food. But now, what I do is I'll actually take oil on the bike with me. I'll drink oil, you know, olive oil, grapeseed oil seems to work. Coconut oil works really well. I'll mix it in with, I'll mix that in with water, and I'll put whey protein in with it. I use a non-sweetened plain whey protein. And the reason I use whey is because it mixes easier, and when it gets hot, it doesn't spoil. And if you use egg protein will sometimes get you real gassy.
Hmm.
It'll bloat you a bit. If you're a vegan, try the hemp protein first. And if that doesn't work, try soy. But you use that, and then there's a product that's actually a grain, but it doesn't act like a grain in your body. It's been micronized in some way, shape, or form. And by the way, I don't get a dime for mentioning this company. They're not a sponsor of mine. I want to say that up front. There's a company called Generation UCAN, and they take basically cornstarch and micronize it to where it doesn't hit your stomach and then it doesn't hit your liver in such a way that you get a glycogen load or a glycogen spike. It acts almost like a fat in your body. Sometimes I'll add a packet of that to my bottle. It's not a calorie in, calorie out proposition. Sometimes I'm taking less than 100 calories an hour.
Right.
And that seems to get me through any workout I want to get through. Now, if I'm going 10, 12, 15 hours, I might add literally packets of cream cheese. I might just squirt them in my mouth. I got that idea from Peter Attia, who does more research on this than anyone else. Sometimes I'll take macadamia nuts with me. Some people have trouble processing nuts when their stomach has less blood in it than usual. I'll take almonds. I never take the raw stuff. Well, I can't say never, but I usually don't take the raw stuff when I'm on a ride because it seems to not process as well when it's raw. I've been known to take peanut butter in a Ziploc bag mixed with more coconut oil and just kind of squish some of that in my mouth. But that's only for the really long rides. If I'm going out for 5 hours, 6 hours, I usually get away with the protein, the fat, with the Yucan. And sometimes I won't even put the Yucan in. I'll just do the protein and the fat.
I've been experimenting with the Yucan because I run marathons a lot, and usually around the 16-mile mark, you know, using all the gels and things, I would just get that horrible stomach feeling like I cannot eat another single thing, you know, but also having that kind of that energy dip. So I was, you know, interested to see if you were recommending the Yucan as well.
Yeah, the Yucan works. What I tell people about, and by the way, Anna just walked back in. Are we up on time? Yeah, Anna's saying we're up on time. Okay. Let me just tell you this quickly about the Yucan thing. People try to use it the way they use like a goo. You know, when you take a goo, it's almost like instant energy and you can keep going.
Right.
With the Yucan, you got to kind of time it 10 or 15 minutes before you need it. And that could take some practice.
Yeah.
Well, it's been good talking to you, Vinny. If people wanted to check you out on the internet, where would they find you at?
Well, you can find me several ways. The best way to find me is by going to Amazon and picking up my book, Fitness Confidential. The other way to find me is at vinnietortorice.com. That's V-I-N-N-I-E, T as in Tom, O-R-T-O-R, again, I-C-H.com. Or the Angriest Trainer podcast, which I do with my beautiful co-host, Anna Vocino. We put out three of those a week. There's 170-some-odd hours of podcast.
You guys are busy.
For your enjoyment.
Wow.
Yeah, we're getting ready to pop out three. As soon as we hang up here, we're calling Dr. Phil Maffetone, I think, and we're doing an interview with him. We have Joe Friel on this week, and we're going to have a race report from a guy named Scotty O, who just did the Leadville 100. Actually, I think Scotty O is coming up next week. But, yeah, that's what we do. That's our thing.
All right.
That's awesome. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. So everybody, go to Amazon, get a copy of his book. We got the Kindle version, and it's an easy read. It's a quick read. It's enjoyable. It's prescriptive and also entertaining because he chronicles his life. And something we even get a chance to talk about is your battle with cancer, Vinny. But that's a big part of the book as well. And then your Furnace Creek 508 ride is part of that. And so, yeah, so everybody go and check Vinny out. And so thanks for coming on the podcast with us.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Vinny. And I definitely am going to be thinking differently about the food I eat now after his no grain, no sugar principle.
It's pretty revolutionary, especially when it comes to endurance athletes and long distance events. You know, so I'm definitely still like trying to fit the pieces together in my mind, doing some experimenting in my own. I'm still trying to come to grips with this and how it actually works in practice. But you're right. I mean, in our day-to-day life, there's so much sugar and grain that we cut out.
That's what I've been thinking about more is my day-to-day life. Not what I feel with for running, but what I actually eat, you know, for breakfast. And if you cut out grains, I mean, what are we left with for breakfast? Like eggs every day, right? I'll have to say bye to our waffles, to our oatmeal, to our hash browns. Angie makes these great hash browns, I tell you. But yeah, life is definitely going to look different. But I think we ought to try it, at least for a month, don't you think?
I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around giving up chocolate. I must admit that I have a chocolate addiction.
You know, if Vinny listens to the end of this podcast and he hears us saying this, imagine how he's shaking his head now in shame.
Well, we're just trying to keep it real here. I mean, everyone has obstacles to making changes in their life, and it's, you know, not easy. And if you try to pretend it is going to be easy, then you're probably going to give up right away. So, yeah, you have to weigh those things out in your mind before you make any big commitment, whether it's training for your first marathon or, you know, just trying to get off the couch and start running or making any dietary changes. You know, your mind has to kind of grapple with it first,
yeah,
before you can really get it done. I admit it will be hard, but
it's worth a try.
It's worth a try. I'm just gonna be really crabby. I'm telling you that.
Oh man,
crabbier.
It's not worth a try then. Okay, we also needed to say that if you do get the book and listen to his podcast, just be aware it's not like a family-friendly show or book. Kind of like we try to keep our show family-friendly. We're not an explicit podcast. So, you know, I don't want you to get the book and because we recommended it and then be offended. He talks about...
adult situations,
yeah.
Language, different things in there.
So just be aware that that's all in there.
Right.
Well, now it's time for this episode's quick tip. And we were scratching our heads wondering what we're going to talk about on a quick tip. And then all of a sudden, I opened the front door and I found this small box. I'm thinking, what is this? Because I didn't order anything. But it was your new, well, refurbished Garmin GPS watch. So I thought, this is the quick tip, because you're pretty happy about the customer service at the Garmin company.
I am exceptionally happy. Yeah, I've had my Garmin 110 for approximately 3 years. It's been very reliable, but in the last couple of months, I started having trouble with what I thought was the battery. And in fact, during my last marathon in Utah, it didn't work completely, so I basically ran it, you know, without my watch. So in the weeks since that marathon, I've called Garmin customer service, and I have just been super impressed. They've, you know, tried to problem solve on the phone, had me do updates and reformat the watch, and, you know, finally we determined that none of those things were helping. And since it was out of warranty, I had to pay a small fee, small-ish fee, $59, send the watch in, and they'll send me a refurbished unit. And basically, I mean, I got the new watch, newer watch, within like 5 days after I sent my old one in. So I'm just, you know, very impressed. And also, I've heard that if you don't want to get a refurbished watch, you can send your old device in and get a credit toward a new product. So if you have a Garmin device that's acting up, or just keep it in mind for the future, visit Garmin.com, go to the customer service, and call the phone number, talk to one of the helpful representatives, and, you know, they'll definitely do everything they can to solve the problem for you.
So all that's usually a big hassle, you know, calling customer service on a product.
Yeah,
but you're saying it wasn't a hassle.
You don't get the runaround. You talk to somebody who you can understand clearly. It's just very, very wonderful.
Very wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pain, you know, obviously when you're a runner and your watch breaks,
yeah,
you're kind of like, feel like a limb is missing. When you run.
Feel naked. You have wrist nakedness.
Yeah. You know, my tan line even evened up, and it was just kind of a stressful thing. And I was dreading calling, but once I did, I was like, wow, these people are so helpful that I have to pass this along. So if you're thinking about getting a Garmin device, you're, you know, debating between two different brands, you know, I would say go with the Garmin because they really back up the products.
Well, the other companies might too. We just haven't tried.
Right.
But thus has been Angie's experience with getting her issues taken care of with her Garmin. So we hope that was a good tip for you, that you can get a refurbished watch for a lot less money than a new one.
So if you're having trouble with your Garmin, don't just give up on it and break down and buy a new one. You know, try calling customer service.
So they're like $200+ for a new 110.
Exactly, exactly.
So we'll hopefully this refurbished one will last you.
I will let you know.
Quick tip on the next podcast. Why you should never buy a Garmin refurbished.
Right. It's maybe the ongoing soggy saga.
That'd be so boring, wouldn't it? Like, updates about your watch every... Well, if you'd like more information on running or marathon training, visit us at marathontrainacademy.com. And when you're there, you can check out the show notes to this episode, as well as our other episodes. And you can get a free audio gift called The 7 Pillars of Successful Marathon Training to help you get well on your way. We do want you to know you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my